Today is Resurrection Day. It is the day Jesus was raised from the dead. Today, the Christian faith confronts the world and says, quite simply, believe it or not. Believe it or not. The Christian faith declares before the world that Jesus was raised from the dead and demands a response from everyone. Believe it or not. And how you respond to that challenge will determine everything as far as every one of us is concerned. Because we can live one's life believing that Jesus, the Jesus who was crucified on Friday last, was raised from the dead by God on this, the third day, or we can live one's life as if it didn't happen. It's a choice we make. You either live life in the light of the resurrection, or you live life as if it never happened at all. Indeed, the Christian faith itself stands or falls by what it proclaims on this day. Peter, preaching soon after the events described, declared quite straightforwardly, "This Jesus, whom you crucified, God has made both Lord and Christ by raising him from the dead." Whether we like it or not, whether we are comfortable with it or not, whether we can accept it or not, if Jesus is not raised from the dead, then everything he said and did during his lifetime dies with him. If he's not raised from the dead, everything he said and did during his lifetime dies with him. Good man. He may well have been a good man. He may have done many good things. He may have set a very good example. An example that has rippled down the centuries and touched the lives of many people. Saying and doing good things, setting a good example, apart from many. Yes, all of this is true, but the Christian faith is not about do-gooding. The Christian faith is not a do-gooding religion. We're not in the market to persuade people to do good. If we were, we would be part of a very crowded marketplace, because there are many varieties of doing good. This is not a do-gooding religion. It is altogether more profound, more startling, more disturbing even, but more liberating, more uplifting than just a guidebook on how to be good. And anyone who lives their life understanding Christianity as that misses out on so much, necessarily limiting the understanding they might have of what faith brings to each one of us. C.S. Lewis is probably one of the finest writers 20th century, particularly in terms of the way he presented the Christian faith to those who otherwise didn't believe. He was what's known in technical language as an apologist. He was one who provided a defense for Christianity in the light of the unfolding events of the 20th century. And Lewis took on this issue concerning Jesus the good man as a basis for faith. And this is what he says. "I am trying here to prevent anyone saying the really foolish thing that people often say about him. I'm ready to accept Jesus as a great moral teacher, but I don't accept his claim to be God. That is the one thing we must not say. A man who was merely a man and said the sort of things Jesus said would not be a great moral teacher. He would either be a lunatic, on the level with the man who says he is a poached egg, or else he would be the devil of hell. You must make your choice. Either this man was and is the Son of God, or else a madman or something worse. You can shut him up for a fool. You can spit at him and kill him as a demon, or you can fall at his feet and call him Lord and God. But let us not come with any patronizing nonsense about his being a great human teacher. He has not left that open to us. He did not intend to. Joe Blunt indeed, but the message gets across. Indeed, to anyone who thinks Jesus was just a good man, remember his own words. Weary words, exasperated words, when a young man comes to him and, trying to curry favor with him, says, "Good teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life?" And Jesus turns around and looks at him and says, "Why do you call me good? No one's good, save God alone. If you really regard me as good, you're confessing me as God. Otherwise, don't patronize me," using Lewis's language. "Don't patronize me by calling me a good teacher." No, today is all about the rewriting of history in the light of eternity. It is about interpreting life in the light of eternal life. It is about understanding how to live in the light of the life of one who lived, who died, and was raised to life. On this day, our topsy-turvy world is turned on its head in the light of what the Christian faith proclaims. And no more is that illustrated than the reading we had, the second of the readings, when Paul contrasts the so-called foolishness of God with the assumed wisdom of men, declaring it is by the foolishness of what is preached that we are saved. And yes, I guess you've heard a lot of foolishness, even from this pulpit, from time to time. But it is by the foolishness of what is preached that we are saved. The cross is foolishness, and so on. Today is April Fool's Day. Don't know if anyone's fallen for it yet. Anyone been persuaded of something they wouldn't otherwise be persuaded of? Any ridiculous story? I love the one that came on my computer screen this morning. Apparently IKEA have opened an airline. They have planes painted in blue and yellow, and they are flying all over Europe. Cut price. The only problem is you have to put your seat together yourself. Today is April Fool's Day. And it might be appropriate to ask of ourselves, in the light of the Easter story, who's fooling who? But of course, the fool is not necessarily someone who makes us laugh. A figure of fun, an entertainer, a comedian, someone who is accident prone, someone who is a disaster in the making. That's how we understand a fool, a foolish person. Yes, we laugh at them. They make us laugh. They are a figure of fun in our eyes. They entertain us. They make us laugh. Comedian. Someone who is accident prone. A disaster in the making. That's our definition of a fool. But to play the fool can be a very serious matter indeed. Shakespeare makes good use of the fool in a number of his plays. He fulfills the most important function. The fool, for Shakespeare, is one who has license to speak truth to power with no holds barred, in a context where no one else dared do that for fear of their lives. The fool, in Shakespeare, is usually the wisest character in the play. Other characters refer to him as the fool. We might know him as the jester. Perhaps the most famous example in Shakespeare is the fool in King Lear. King Lear is a disturbing play, but at its heart is a relationship that has much in common with the way Paul structures his argument concerning the respective merits of worldly wisdom, foolishness in the eyes of God, and godly wisdom, foolishness in the eyes of the world. He doesn't even have a name in King Lear. He's simply called Fool. He is Lear's constant companion. He accompanies him on his journey into madness and eventually death. And he himself, just before Lear's own death, is hanged by those who have imprisoned Lear. In this play, the fool functions as the inner consciousness of the foolish king, who is foolish while his fool is wise. Constantly commenting on Lear's relentless folly. Every time Lear does something foolish, like giving up all his power to his daughters, remember that, those of you who have daughters. Every time he does it, giving up his power to his daughters, the fool rubs it in. When Lear finally achieves a measure of understanding about how much he lacked in wisdom, the fool, there is no need for him. And so he dies. And it's always interesting to discover where particular phrases which have passed into common currency have their origin. It is in King Lear that we read, "Many a true word has been spoken in jest." Many a true word has been spoken in jest. "I'm jesting with you. Jesus has been raised from the dead. It's the foolishness of preaching. I'm the fool. I'm here to play the fool for you today." Jesus, during his own lifetime, played the fool over and against the worldly wisdom of the religious and political leaders of his day, and in the end is crucified because the wisdom of the world could take his foolishness no more. But in his stead, God has raised up the community of the resurrection, the church. And our role in society today is to play the fool for Christ in the face of the malign forces that influence the so-called wise man, the so-called scribe, the so-called debater of this and of any age. If we do our job properly, if we play the role of the fool to perfection, we will drive the world mad with rage. It may well turn against us. It may well cost us our life. But resurrection declares that even though we die, yet shall we live. That life shall emerge victorious from death. That the foolishness of what we preach will triumph over the spirit of the age, any age, every age. Christ has died. Christ is risen. He is risen indeed. That is the cry that goes forth from this place today, that echoes round and about us, that reverberates down the years and across the miles. The world is not what it was because of Jesus having been raised from the dead. And neither should we be. April 4th. Easter Fool. Anyone?